If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I'm so lucky. I talk to the very best people. And Dr. Sophia Yin was a frequent guest on this radio show. We'll talk about her in a moment. The name of this book, Dr. Sophia Yin's Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats, edited by Dr. Christine Calder and Pat Coven. Dr. Calder is a veterinary behaviorist, and right here, right now. Good morning, Dr. Calder.
Good morning. Very nice to speak with you. Thank you for having me.
So what motivated you? Now, for people who don't know, something called, and you'll explain what low stress handling is in a moment, but I credit, and you'll tell me if you agree, Dr. Yin for pioneering that entire idea, which led to fear-free, which has changed veterinary medicine way for the better. And as a result, the welfare of dogs and cats and other animals for the better as well. But for me, in many ways, it all began with Dr. Sophia Yin. Do you agree? And can you also, can you explain also what low stress handling is?
So Sophia, you know, this was a passion of hers, and, you know, she just observed all of these animals in the veterinary hospital were afraid. They were fearful. They were anxious. And she really wanted to find a way to help them. She wanted to find a way to make their lives better. She wanted to find a way to make this experience better for them and also for those that were working with those animals as well, and to improve safety. You know, we know that bites are a common or a frequent reason why, you know, those in our veterinary profession, it's common. You know, it's a risk that we take in that profession. And so she really, I mean, she spent years studying how different people were restraining animals, handling animals, interacting with animals, and developed this program, you know, way back in this book. The original book was published in 2009, so many, many years ago, long before we had fear-free, long before we had cat-friendly, you know, we had Sophia and low stress handling, and it really was, you know, an amazing concept that really no one else had looked at. And for Sophia, it was a big passion of hers to really improve the welfare of the animals and those that were working with those animals.
Yes. And she often spoke at veterinary meetings as well as to dog trainers and other professionals in the business about how to provide what she called low stress handling to animals. And she demonstrated with science why this was so incredibly important to the welfare of dogs and cats as well. And she would have videos that showed us examples about how to do this before anyone did. And I would suggest, Dr. Calder, at some point in time, things began to change greatly because of her first, before fear-free and cat-friendly practices came along, as you say, where it was... Veterinarians were taught, just get the job done. Dog trainers were similarly taught, just get the job done. And Dr. Yin said, well, you can do the job more efficiently. It's not just get it done, it's how you get it done.
Yes, exactly. How you get it done, you know, how you hold that animal, you know, how she had those 10 general handling principles that she developed, that, you know, these were the 10 things that you needed to be focusing on when it came to improving the welfare of these animals and handling these animals, and things like, you know, letting them make the choice where that exam occurred, and, you know, was that on the table? Was that on the floor? You know, adjusting your approach, you know, based upon the feedback, you know, supporting them, you know, cats especially, you know, they like all 4 feet on the table. And so, you know, when we lift them up, you know, we're not, it's hard, and they can feel unsteady, you know, same thing with dogs, controlling movement in all six directions, you know, just helping these animals feel more safe and feel more secure, you know, help them to be more comfortable with the things that, you know, needed to be done, but we don't need to use Bruticane. We really don't. And that's one of the things that, you know, she really sent that message out that there are other ways that we can do this, that, you know, we don't have to force these animals. We can, you know, we can work with them and help them feel more comfortable as we are working through and getting things done, but in a way that is more beneficial for the welfare and emotional state of that animal.
I remember going to one talk of hers, and she said, previous to this that you're about to see, it took, I think it was five veterinary technicians to hold down a little terrier dog. And Imagine how that dog felt. Never mind the concern about those people holding down the dog. I mean, no one goes into the veterinary profession wanting to hurt an animal. And the dog was there in the first place because the dog wasn't feeling so great. This doesn't help. And said, okay, look, here's how you can do it. And it's this easy.
Yes, it is. And it is that easy. And that's, you know, I come from, you know, before I was a behaviorist, I was a general practitioner. And so, you know, that's where a lot of this, you know, for me has come from, is being in the trenches, you know, and working with these animals. But the more you hold them down, the more they struggle, you know, and the more likely they're to struggle on the next visit. And this was something that, you know, she really brought to light. And she's like, hey, you know, look at what's happening with these animals. They're not getting better when we add on more people. They're getting worse. You know, and that's something that I think was eye-opening, you know, for many of us. I know for me, in the veterinary field myself, having been in practice, you know, by the time she came onto the scene, I'd already been in practice for almost 10 years. And so, you know, it was really eye-opening to say, hey, you don't have to do it that way. You know, we've got other options, and this is what they are. And I think for her, you know, that was just, I mean, it was just amazing what she brought to that veterinary field and to these animals and being able to show people, you know, just by showing them, you know, this is how you do it. And you could see the difference. And she was very skilled, you know, at what she did. She was, you know, she was amazing and very skilled. But she wanted to teach others to have that same skill set. And that's, you know, I think that was wonderful for the veterinary field as well.
Well, indeed. And what's written about a lot in this book is something called targeting. Can you explain what that is and how people may be able to use this at home?
Yeah, targeting is one of my favorite behaviors. It's because it's so easy to teach. But targeting is, you know, targeting a body part to something else. So, you know, frequently we do nose targeting, nose to hand, nose to a target stick. But you can teach them to target other parts of their body. If we teach them to go to a mat, we're teaching them to target their body to a mat. But it's a way to communicate with that animal and to make that process, you know, much more predictable to that animal, much more consistent. And so we can teach them, you know, to touch their nose to our hand, and we can direct them into, you know, different positions. We can direct them onto the table. We can direct them onto a mat. We can direct them onto the scale just by having them, you know, touch their nose to our hand. It's a very versatile behavior. It's one that we use in the behavior field. It's one that I use as a kind of a foundational behavior for, you know, behavior modification. We teach targeting first, and then we utilize it in different situations. So, you know, targeting is a really good foundational behavior, easy to teach. You stick your hand down. Usually they're going to come up and sniff it. You're going to mark that, you know, and then you're going to reinforce them. And it becomes something that, for the dog, it helps build confidence. It really helps to have more of a hands-off way of getting them into, you know, however we need them, wherever we need them to go, whatever position we need them to be in. And it's the basis for cooperative care, you know, teaching them to target their foot to our hand can be a way to start with the process of nail trims.
We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what cooperative care even is when we come back with Dr. Yes. Christine Calder on WGN. This had to be a labor of love. Dr. Christine Calder, as well as Pat Coven, put a book together, and actually a superstar lineup of veterinarians, veterinary behaviorists, veterinary technicians who are specialists in behavior. Dr. Sophia Yin's Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. That's the name of the book. I want to talk about cooperative care in a moment. Did it take you 17 years to put this book together? Because there are, I think, 500 pages almost here.
It took 4 years. 4 years to put that book together. 4 years of revisions of, you know, changing the format. Four hard years. It's about almost 400 pages. And there's a second book that has the rest of the story. Yes.
There's more.
We had to remove three chapters, otherwise it would have been over 600 pages.
All right. Well, as it is, I said last week that you could walk around with this book and forget about going to the health club for your resolution. Just walk around with this book. It's so heavy. But it's wonderful because so much is in it. Updated on the original Bible that Sophia Yin wrote, Dr. Yin passed away several years ago, and you and others picked up the mantle to get this done, and I'm certain she would have been so proud. It's also a beautiful book, as was her original book, with images that are just terrific and also depict exactly what you're talking about. And when Sophia Yin wrote the original Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats, terms like cooperative care weren't out there quite yet, but now they are. What is that? You mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, so cooperative care is having the patient, the animal, the dog, the cat, horses, or it could be any species, be more proactive or be an active participant in their own care. And so there are many different ways to do that. They've been doing it in the zoological field for many, many years. We are doing it in the veterinary field as well, but you know, for many of these animals, it's very stressful to go to the veterinary hospital. And you know, cooperative care is our long-term plan. It's our long-term treatment plan for these animals. Help them feel more comfortable, you know, with these processes. Help them to make the choice or the decision to say, yes, I'm willing to participate. I'm opting in to this procedure. And it really, for our patients, can really make a big difference in how they feel about that process and how they feel about that interaction. And it really, by giving them that voice and allowing them to say, yes, I'm okay with this, you know, we're giving them back some of the control that for them really makes a big difference in their emotional state.
So I did a video, and in that video I said, okay, I've got my cat here, Groucho, and here is how Groucho will ask me to clip his nails. And I did the video, and people then wrote, you made this up, there's editing or something. And it was a live video, I think, actually. How do you do that, you know? But I showed again how to do this. How can you do, so I'll use cats as an example. How can you do what you call cooperative care for a cat, and is probably the right word, not to a cat, but with a cat. That's even better, right? With the cat. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so the first thing we do is we teach them, or if they offer them, some kind of a start behavior. So that might be targeting. You know, it might be, you know, targeting their foot to our hand. But it's a way for them to say, okay, I'm okay with this. It's a way for them to communicate with us. And so, you know, one of the ways is first we teach that start button behavior or start signal, and then we then we can go on from there. So then we take the next step in the process. So, you know, let's say they're afraid of the clippers. You know, first they have to give us that start signal, and then we can work on that next step of the plan, which would be the desensitization and counter conditioning. It's always important that they have a choice to say no. They always have a choice to say, to opt out, and they've always got an alternative location that they can go, or some other highly reinforcing, whether that's to leave, whether that's to go to a mat, whether that's to get, you know, a food source from another location. But it really needs to be, they have to truly feel like they can say no and walk away, and we are going to respect that. And by doing that, you know, they're much more likely to continue to participate because they know that they're safe in that way. And if they decide at any point that they don't want to continue on, we will respect that. And that is what I think is true cooperative care. But we start out by, you know, those start signals that might be going to a mat, that might be offering a paw, that might be eye contact. You know, it really just depends on what that animal is comfortable with, and what they want to offer to us, and also us recognizing those things, and really building that really strong bond and that trust between, you know, whoever is going to be working with that animal and the animal themselves, so that they know that they don't have to escalate it to any kind of aggressive behaviors, because they don't need to. They can just walk away if they decide they don't want to participate anymore.
And can it also enhance the human-animal bond? I mean, imagine this. The cat is actually saying, not only can you clip my nails, but really, here's my paw. Go ahead. As long as I get something else in return, or as long as something else is happening that I really like, I'm okay with that. Does that actually do the opposite of what grabbing the cat, having seven other people in the house hold the cat down while you grab the nail clipper and the cat is screaming and all that happens? Doesn't have to be that way.
Doesn't have to be that way. Exactly. It doesn't have to be that way. That is the past. That
all
is
right.
Not the future.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't have to be that way. And Dr. Yin also was talking a lot about cats, maybe more than some others back at that point in time, including what she called the burrito wrap. And I want to talk about what that is, and it's not lunch. We'll talk about what that is when we come back with Dr. Christine Calder, Dr. Sophia Yin's Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. This book actually, I mean, we're never going to cover anywhere near everything in this book, in this conversation, but this will be a new Bible. I love this book. And if you're a professional in any way, such as a dog trainer, you've got to get this book. We'll be right back. So there was a TikTok video that I commented on. Here's what the video was. You know how dogs and vacuum cleaners don't seem to get along? There's been this war that's been going on forever, and since vacuum cleaners, I believe, have been invented. So here's what the guy did. He took out the vacuum cleaner, and the dogs are already looking like, what's that? What's going to happen? And then instead of plugging in the vacuum cleaner, he started to yell and scold at the vacuum cleaner. You make too much noise. That's wrong. Don't do that anymore. It was a humorous video. He said the dogs will no longer be afraid of the vacuum because he scolded the vacuum. That's not the way to do it necessarily. It's a fun video, but that's not going to make a difference for your dogs. The good news is you can make a difference for your dogs. Just type in the word vacuum on my website, stevedale.tv, and you'll see, well, four steps, the right way to do it. It's called desensitization and counter conditioning, and it works. I've had the pleasure, Steve Dale back with you on WGN, of talking with some of the most influential people in veterinary medicine ever. And that would include Dr. Sophia Yin. She was on the show, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. I don't really know how many times, but frequently over the years. And I miss her greatly because she had such a, first of all, because she was a kind person, but she had such a incredible passion about teaching. And she was always so generous to share If she had a slide that I thought, well, I can use this, she would share that with me that I could use in my presentations. I'm not a veterinarian. She had no issue with that whatsoever, as long as I was communicating correct information to people. Just absolutely a wonderful person. She wrote a book called Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. That book has now been updated. A second edition, edited by Dr. Christine Calder and Pat Coven, and a list of superstar veterinarians and veterinary technicians who contributed as well. Dr. Calder, how did this idea of updating what was a classic book, how did that happen in the first place?
Oh. That's a good question. So what actually happened is in 2020, Sophia's mom actually came to the Veterinary Information Network, and she wanted a place where all of Sophia's materials could go, and that library could be kept and continue on her mission of education. And so, you know, that's where that kind of started. But the book was our first kind of group project that we were going to put together, because it had been at that time, you know, had been almost 10 years for the book, and it's actually used in many of the veterinary technician programs and veterinary assistant programs as a required reading for those programs. And so it was starting to get more and more difficult for the instructors to get approval to use this book because it was, you know, because of the age of the book. So it became our first real project of updating that. And things had changed, you know, things had changed, especially if we're talking about, you know, our feline friends and what has changed in the feline world. You know, Sophia, it was groundbreaking in 2011 when they wrote the feline friendly handling guidelines. And Sophia was part of that. Alona Roden was part of that. And where they first talked about not scruffing cats,
yeah,
you know, and the towel wraps and don't box cats down, you know. And so Sophia was a part of that initial movement. But things have changed even now. Now we have the 2022 guidelines. And so we knew that it needed some work. And so we set about as a mission, as a group. The plan was at first, we're just going to update it, you know, and then we'll do like a complete revision. But over time, we began to realize this is a much bigger project than we originally anticipated. So the book came to be, and you know, it was kind of like recruiting others who had worked with Sophia and knew Sophia and were out there and practicing and educating others and who was out there. And so we all kind of grew as a group with the same mission in mind, and to, you know, we want to keep this alive and what she had started, and we want to update it and keep that information out there. So that is where it all started back in, you know, 2020, when we started on this project.
So
we brought in a lot of great people to really help, those that are experts in the, you know, in their field, you know, Monique Fairchild and she was a great choice for communication and building a team and how do we all learn to work together.
Yeah.
You know, we had Sherry and Learning Theory, and she's written, you know, recipes in the second book about how to actually do some of these things. You know, we've got several veterinary behaviorists that are, you know, that were contributing authors. Leanne Lilly is a contributing author. You know, several that reviewed it. It was a lot. Pat and I, we sat down and for several months we went through page by page by page and we practiced all of the different handling techniques, and we're like, okay, we need to put the left hand over here, and you know, and you know, we would practice on the stuffed animals like Sophia used to.
Did you? Yeah, she did. She did. I remember that. I remember. So you said no scruffing of cats. Why? Why is that? Why?
because it takes away their choice. They don't have a choice. It tends to be much more stressful. And for many cats, they emotionally withdraw. They go into that learned helplessness, and it's really stressful for them, you know, and it's not comfortable for cats. So no scruffing of cats.
And I like the fact, yeah, as Sophia Yin did, you take a point of view. So equipment for dogs to avoid, and you come out and say this, no prong or pinch collars, no choke collars to tighten around their neck, no retractable leashes, no shock collars, and no even citronella ultrasonic or anti-bark collars. Why not those, the citronella ultrasonic or anti-bark? I think we don't talk about that often enough.
Yes, because they really are, well, one, they're not very effective. The dogs often habituate to them, or they become sensitized to them. They can have side effects. They can cause stress. They can cause anxiety. They can cause them to associate, you know, certain things with pain and discomfort, and they can cause frustration. And so, you know, they're really not ideal. They might be a great short-term fix, and that's really all they are, is short-term. But the potential for side effects are so high, it's much better just to avoid them than even try to use those types of devices. Yeah, it's not good for that animal, and you're not really addressing why they might be barking in the first place. You know, what else is going on that's causing that behavior? And that's what we have to dig deeper. We have to find that root cause, and we can't just put a Band-Aid on it. We have to actually address what's really going on if we want to change that behavior long term.
We have a minute here before the break, but you're right. Food is a primary reinforcer and is essential for survival. It serves as an effective distraction, alters emotional responses, and rewards specific behaviors. Well, books that came out before this, the original Sophia Yin book, often wrote that, well, food is bribery. So can you talk about how, briefly here, and we'll talk more after the break. In fact, you know what? We're going to take that break now, and then we're going to learn how to correctly use food. And we still haven't talked about a burrito, and I don't mean lunch. I mean to help our cats feel more comfortable if they're that anxious, and many are, at a veterinary clinic. And we will do all that with Dr. Christine Calder when we come back on WGN. Dr. Christine Calder is an editor of Dr. Sophia Yin's Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats, an update of the classic book. And in fact, before the break, we were talking about food, one of my favorite topics, probably a favorite topic for your dog or cat as well, particularly for a lot of dogs. But at one point in time, and still today, many suggest using food is just like bribery. But Dr. Yin and this book, as I read earlier, support using food in the right way. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, food is a really, it's something they need to stay alive. It's a primary, what we call a primary reinforcer, and it can be a very powerful tool to reinforce desirable behaviors. So those behaviors that we want to see more of through positive reinforcement. There are certain ways to use it, but pairing food can act as a distractor, especially in the veterinary hospital. But it also acts as a very powerful way to say to that animal, I like what you just did. Please, you know, I'd like to see that again. And by reinforcing these behaviors, we're much more likely to see those behaviors over and over again, and less likely to see the ones that we don't want to see, our undesirable behaviors. So food can be a really powerful reinforcer. You do have to be careful how you pair it. You know, you can cause food aversion, so we want to make sure that we're pairing it correctly. We are not using it as a bribe. You know, we want to make sure that it comes after the fact. You know, if they offer the behavior, we want to mark that, like yes, or something that says that's the behavior I like, and then we reinforce them. And that's how we get behaviors to happen over and over and over again.
I want to talk about that burrito I keep saying I want to talk about. I'm getting hungry. I want a breakfast burrito right now, actually, now that I've talked about it so much. But at one point in time, and you are too young to remember, but there's still videos of this. I show one of those videos in one of the talks I give. And when I first began to show the video, people were kind of quiet about it several years ago. Now, it's almost like boo, hiss, everybody knows this is not the right thing to do. And what I'm talking about is a well-meaning, I'm certain, veterinarian at that time taking out, and I guess people still do this here and there around the country, taking out a fishing net and capturing the cat in there. And I suggest, Dr. Calder, here you have a cat that's screaming, quite literally. I believe, we don't know this for sure, we're not in their heads, but I believe that cat actually believes I'm going to die right now. And then chasing the cat around the room, capturing it in this fishing pole net, and then giving it whatever vaccine. How can you even do an exam under those circumstances? I don't know. And Dr. Yin said, no, one way to do this is medication. Another way to do this, we know better today than even when Dr. Yin was around, is pre-medicate before the veterinary visit and even practice going to the veterinarian. And even, if possible, begin when the cat is a kitten with kitten classes so the kitten gets adjusted not only to the veterinary clinic but the car ride to go there. But certainly not use that. And if anything else, if you need to do something, use a burrito wrap. So can you comment further on what I just said?
Yes. Well, we're actually moving even now further away from the burrito wraps. We're actually doing more loosely wrapped, warm, pheromone-infused towels. You know, a lot of these cats, we don't want to tightly wrap them, but we can loosely drape the towel around them, especially for those cats that like to have a hiding space. Here's one of the things that I found, you know, going through all of Sophia's pictures, and we have all of her pictures, and just looking at it, I couldn't find any pictures where the cat in a wrap didn't look stressed.
Mm.
They were all pretty stressed. And so, and then having, you know, just having some of the reviewers and that kind of thing, we looked at more at maybe these tight towel wraps aren't ideal. You know, maybe we've got some other, maybe we need to be looking at some of these other options. We still talk about towel wraps and we still use them, but instead of the really tight ones, we're more using more loosely, and then reaching for sedation earlier in the process, reaching for those pre-visit medications earlier in the process to really help these cats feel much more comfortable when it comes to coming to the veterinary hospital and having these procedures done.
And this is volume one, follow-up, the second edition, but there's going to be a third edition, and in that I'm thrilled to learn you're going to write about kitten classes as well.
Yes, kitten classes, exactly. And we've got a new course that's being developed also about kitten classes and how to structure them and how to run them, you know, in your practice, in the shelter environment. You know, these were things that, you know, I think, you know, not only for kittens, but also for puppies as well. So one of the, you know, goals with the book and how it's actually outlined is we go from, we talk about how to build communication, then we go into how to prevent these behavior problems, especially fear at the veterinary hospital, and then we talk about how we're going to work with those animals. So one of the things that we can do to prevent fear and anxiety and frustration from forming at the veterinary hospital itself is puppy and kitten classes. But it's also helpful to have these available to shelters as well, you know, because we know that, you know, behavior is one of the main reasons why animals are surrendered to shelters. It's one of the main reasons that they lose their homes. It's one of the main reasons that they lose their lives. And so what are some of the ways that we can help prevent that? And so one of the ways is preparing them for life. And so we know from the research that puppy classes, kitty kindergarten classes, they prepare them for life, and they can provide them with skills and that they can help them to cope better as they get older and navigate their way through the world, through the human world in which they live in.
I absolutely agree with that, but I'd like to add to it, and that is also preparing the pet parent for life, because here's an opportunity to get answers responsibly, not necessarily through Dr. Google, which can be correct, but may not be. So here is a way also, if the class is held at a veterinary clinic, to acclimate or bond the pet parent to the veterinary clinic and find a resource in the veterinary technician or veterinarian or dog trainer teaching the class.
Exactly. That is, you are exactly right, because, you know, so many now reach for Dr. Google, and you really, it's really important to have that bond with your client. And I think that's, you know, long-term relationships are really, really important, you know, especially in the veterinary field, and knowing that your pet is getting the best care. And so this is one of the ways in which you can do that, and you have a reliable source in the veterinary team.
Yep.
But really, when we're talking about the veterinary hospital, building that bond between the client and the veterinary team is so important, because you're right. They need to be able to know they have a place to go to that they're going to get the best information out there for them and for their pets.
One more question for you. Where can people get this book? Is it Amazon? Does that work?
It is. So, yes, it is moving on to Amazon. It should be on Amazon, I think. They just started to offer it on Amazon, or you can get it through CattleDogPublishing.com.
CattleDogPublishing.com. Dr. Sophia Yins, Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. Dr. Christine Calder, thank you for doing this book, and thank you for joining us. So here's one of those questions I frequently get and did receive. Why do dogs like to chew on our shoes? Well, it's because dogs like to chew in general. And if you don't give them something to chew that's appropriate, they're probably going to chew something that's inappropriate, especially if it smells like you, as your shoes do. Also, apparently to dogs, many shoes are just fun to chew on, in particular because you've left them out in the first place, the texture of the shoes I'm talking about. But anxious dogs will often chew on items, including shoes, as an outlet for anxiety as well. And if that only happens when you're not home, that could be a sign of separation anxiety or distress. Much more information about this, why dogs chew on our shoes, on my website, which is stevedale.tv. Next week, we talk to you, as always, bright and early on WGN.